All right. See ya. City Council will come back to order. If I could get the remaining arts and culture folks to please enjoy the marble floors in the foyer. So if we, yeah. Oh, it's Commissioner Leonard. All right, City Council will come back to order. So the City Council will come back to order, and we have a 10 o'clock time certain, so clearly we're running late. Carla, since he's in the room, we have a quorum. Can you please read the title for the 10 o'clock time certain, item number 279?
Yes. Accept the audit of the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report for fiscal year 2010-2011 and the related communications with those charged with governance and adopt a resolution to correct the deficiency in financial reporting controls disclosed in the audit.
Can somebody close the doors? Steve, can you close the door? One moment, please.
Sorry.
No, that's all right.
I know.
We are very honored. Auditor Griffin DeLay.
Good morning. I'm LaVon Griffin DeLay, City Auditor. And first, I want to start with a couple of notes of full disclosure.
One is I started first grade in the fall of 1958.
Ah.
So I had the benefit of a long time music and arts education, even in Far Eastern Oregon.
Ooh.
So, and the other.
Did you listen to Jimi Hendrix?
I did, as a matter of fact. No.
Disclosure. Right. Full disclosure.
Okay. You people are old.
I put on my first diaper in the fall of 1958.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
I did. I was born September 30th. We shifted the diapers.
Sure. Yeah. Uh huh.
I did.
And the other item of full disclosure is that I'm a lapsed soprano.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
As in the TV series or singer?
Touche.
Yeah. Ooh, I will definitely miss you.
Yeah.
Again, I'm LaVon Griffin, Blade City Auditor. I'm here today with Drummond Kahn and Fiona Earle of the Audit Services Division, and we're here to introduce Jim Lanzarotta from Moss Adams LLP, the audit firm responsible for the annual audit of the city's financial statements. Jim will be discussing the results of the firm's audit of the city's comprehensive annual financial report for fiscal year 2010-2011. The comprehensive annual financial report is prepared each year by OMF, and the city is statutorily required to have the financial statements contained in the report audited each year in accordance with government auditing standards. The Audit Services Division of my office manages the contract with the outside audit firm for this citywide audit. This financial statement audit is an independent audit which determines whether the city's financial statements fairly present the city's financial position. The audit is akin to an independent person reviewing your ATM card receipts and bank statements for accuracy. The audit simply tells the city and the public whether the records are accurate. So it's important to note that the outside audit does not determine whether the city spending is good or bad, appropriate or inappropriate, just like an accurate statement from your bank doesn't tell you if you're spending your money on the right things. So the audit firm is required by auditing standards to present this information to those charged with governance, and in this case, that's you folks. So without further ado, Jim Lanzarotta.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Well, this experience between the last presentation and mine is exactly my experience in school when I thought I wanted to be an artist and a musician. I really know how to clear a room.
All right.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, people would be interested to know that I thought that art would be my ticket in life. I quickly realized that wasn't going to pay the bills. Then it was music. I realized that wasn't going to pay the bills, so now it's all about music appreciation. So I'm pretty good at that.
Okay, good.
Anyway, so gosh, not as glitzy as the topic maybe of the last session, but clearly an important one. Can the city put together its financial statements accurately and in compliance with the standards that go along with how this document gets put together? That's what our audit is all focused on. So I'd like to tell you a little bit about what you engaged us to do and break that audit into pieces that may make a little bit more sense. And obviously you want to know the results. So we'll talk about what we found. And then there are some things that I'm required to communicate to you. And I've actually done that through a written letter, which you've been presented already. So I'm only going to hit on some highlights and then answer some questions. We don't need to read that since you've already received that. So that's my charge today. So you engaged us to do, LaVon mentioned, a citywide audit. So that includes the city and all the activities that that you folks are responsible for overseeing. That also includes the police, fire, disability, and retirement fund. We audited the activity of that. You engaged us to audit the Portland Development Commission. So that's a component unit of yours, as you know, that handles the urban renewal activities for the city, among other things. And you require an audit of your hydroelectric power fund by itself to satisfy some contractual obligations that you face related to some of Hydro's activities. So those four elements were audited. Separate financials were issued for each of those. And, of course, all of that is included in one document as well, the city's overall financial statement. So the audit, I like to break it down into about six phases. What do we do? I think you understand most of the phases pretty well. You know, one of them is an independent kicking of the tires, if you will. We look at source documents. We talk directly to third parties that you work with, banks, the folks that hold your money, the people that hold your debt or invest in your debt, to make sure that their records are consistent with your records. A lot of testing of transactions and balances. But another piece you may not be as obvious is the requirement to look at the internal controls. What are those checks and balances that management uses to make sure that they can capture all the activity correctly and get it in this document correctly? And we have an obligation to tell you if there are weaknesses in that. And we did have a couple weaknesses that I'll mention to you in my report. LaVon mentioned that you are required under state law to get an audit. Since you're an Oregon Municipal Corporation, the state law says auditors that audit Oregon municipal corporations, there are certain laws that we have to test your compliance with and then do a report to you, which I will do today as well. So that's a third element. A fourth element is the federal grants that you receive. That also comes with compliance requirements and the need to have internal controls that help you meet those compliance requirements. And it comes with a requirement for you to have your auditor look specifically at whether you're complying with these unique and special elements of administering your grant programs. So I'll be talking about that. You're very fortunate. You've got experienced people in the OMF department, the folks that put together this CAFR. There aren't that many governments in Oregon, believe it or not, that can put this document together entirely with staff in-house. So you've got some very smart folks that know how to do this. Our task, then, is just to make sure that what gets in here is consistent with the balances that we audited and, of course, that they're meeting all of the disclosure requirements. So we do a testing and a review of this. We don't have to prepare it, which is very nice for us. We don't like to prepare a document. We also have to turn around and audit, but not everyone can do that. And then the sixth element is just giving reports, kind of what we're doing today. So we've met with management throughout the process. We've met with the auditor's office throughout the process to keep them informed. We had a debrief with all the bureaus to go over the results. And now the final stage is to go before you and talk about the results. So those are the elements of the audit. So what were the results? So we're very pleased to bring to you the fact that for each of these elements, the city overall, Portland Development Commission, FPDNR, and Hydro in those separately issued statements, that the city received what we call a clean opinion in layman's terms, or technical terms, an unqualified opinion. So basically, we didn't have to qualify that for any exceptions that we noted. So the city is able to put together these statements in a materially accurate fashion. And so no small feat, and very pleased to be able to sit here and tell you that your crew is able to do that and meet those obligations accurately. Now, so that's the overall opinions, and you'll find that in the city's CAFR on page 11. I don't know if you have this, have it with you, but just to highlight a couple pages. Page 11 is where that overall opinion is on the city's financial statements. Now, we mentioned that part of the audit is to look at internal controls. And there was one weakness that we identified for the city and one weakness in controls we identified for Portland Development Commission. And those are reported in our report under the single audit in a schedule called the Schedule of Findings and Question Costs. So in Portland Development Commission, that dealt with their ability to get a new accounting standard correct. So it's just unfortunate misinterpretation of a brand new accounting standard they had to apply for the first time. So they misclassified some things in the fund balance section of their financials. So the audit identified that, and we were able to get that corrected before the statement was issued. For the city, we have a material weakness in internal control finding related to intergovernmental agreements and the communication of that to the folks that put your financial statements together, so OMF. As you know, you're very decentralized, so several bureaus that do the operational business for the city, and that information or the activities they get involved in, the agreements they enter into, that information has to funnel to the folks in OMF to understand if there's an accounting or reporting significance to that. And we found three instances. Actually, it was found by your management folks first, and it was identified that three instances where agreements had been entered into with accounting and reporting significance that weren't handled properly in the financial statements in the past. So those issues have been corrected now. And in fact, management's already worked on a plan to improve the control weaknesses that led to the errors that were being made in relation to understanding what's in these intergovernmental agreements. That was an issue there. On the federal grants, I think a graph was handed to you today that you might find very interesting. You've been very fortunate at attracting federal dollars to help fund your programs, and you'll see that that really has increased in the last few years and was a very large number this last year. So historically, you've been $40, $50 million of federal grant dollars annually. For this last fiscal year, you were almost $120 million of federal grants that came into the city, highly influenced by PBOT activity, Department of Transportation grants for your various transportation programs. The result of that was we had nearly a doubling of the programs that we needed to look at under the single audit. And so we looked at eight federal programs, which result in, I don't know, it's probably 30 or 40 different individual grant projects funded in the city last year that we looked at. And I'm pleased to tell you that we had no instances of non-compliance, which is a phenomenal result given the increased or the expanded dollars that you're receiving and administering here at the city. So no findings of non-compliance, and...
Boy, I hope they're listening down in the Oregonian office.
Yeah. The other neat thing
is... I doubt
is,
it.
You know, anytime you receive these grants, not only do you need to comply, but you have to have internal controls that help you comply with it. And there could be, you know, seven or eight or nine different compliance requirements associated with each grant, and we found that your controls were all good over those. So hats off to your departments. You've got a very good educated grants department, and the folks out in the bureaus where they're administering these, especially PBOT, what a great job they've done with the increased workload that they've had with the grant programs that they've had. So anyway, I just thought you'd be interested, and a very good result in our testing of the grant programs this year. In terms of state legal compliance, we had the same type of finding. One finding that was the same for Portland Development Commission in the city. I think the city had... one or two over expenditures against your appropriated budget, and PDC also had one. I forget who had one and who had two now, but and that's probably the most common thing that we find in our testing of for Oregon legal compliance. You do wind up it's common to wind up with a couple of funds that have line items that get overspent. You don't want to be in that case, in that situation, but it does happen from time to time. And so, but out of all the areas we tested, the other areas of local budget law, public purchasing, insurance, the legality of the deposits and investments, all of those other areas, we did not find any areas of noncompliance with state laws. So a pretty decent result in that regard as well. Okay, the last piece of mine is just to, again, I've issued to you a letter our firm has on our required communications. I hope you've had a chance to read through that. I only want to hit on a couple things, a couple things I think that you'd be interested in. One of them is, you know, people want to know, did we end up with any audit adjustments? So did we identify errors as a result of our work? And I'm pleased to tell you there were some errors identified. They were immaterial to the financial statements. So we didn't have anything that we say rises to an audit adjustment that we required management to post. In fact, the errors that were identified, I think, were identified for the most part by management. Some of them were identified by us. I think there were four immaterial errors identified. Three of them were corrected in the current year. One was not. Some cash in a trust account that wasn't in the city's books, and that'll be corrected in a future period. So no audit adjustments, four immaterial errors identified, three of them corrected by management. Another thing I figured you'd probably want to know about is, did we have any disagreements or difficulties in the audit, disagreements with management? And I'm pleased to tell you we did not have disagreements. We've had some spirited discussions, and those are all healthy. But management did not try to get in the way of our work or create problems for us in that. Our experience with the city has been very positive in terms of you've got very dedicated folks in the that we get an opportunity to work with, the folks that put this document together. What we experience is that they want to get it right, and they reach out, they talk, they consult with us about issues. That's not the case with all our clients, so we very much appreciate the tone that we receive here at the city and the dedication of your staff and the level of effort they put into making sure this document gets put together correctly. So, and then I guess the last thing I would say, LaVon mentioned that, you know, our audit is really directed towards whether this document is put together accurately and does it meet all of the requirements of the accounting standards, the governmental accounting standards. It's not a blessing on the city's finances. It's not telling you that you're being efficient with the use of resources. You know, it is a pretty big document too, so I don't know, you know, how much you read, if you read this cover to cover, but what I wanted to say is that, you know, most governing boards maybe don't read this cover to cover, but if you only had 10 minutes, the Governmental Accounting Standards Board said that if someone wanted to look at the health of a government and they only had 10 minutes, where would you go? What pages would you look at in here? And I just thought I'd mention that to you. What they found, the response was, people want to know what is the fund balance or what are the net assets and what are the trends. And we're fortunate, there's a statistical section towards the back, and the first few pages of that statistical section has that information. So there are pages 286 in about the next three or four pages. And I would say if all you had was 10 minutes, take a look at those pages. Look at the trends. There's 10 years of trend information about what's happening with the net assets and fund balances at the end of each of those 10 years, so you can kind of see. And I'd encourage you to look at that, develop some questions, and make sure you're communicating with your finance staff periodically about what does that mean. Because it could be very telling about, you know, the trend, where are you going, what's happening here at the city with the financial policies that are currently in place. And with that, I would open it up for questions.
Questions, discussion?
Thank you very much. Has anyone signed up to testify?
No one else signed up.
All right. Then I move acceptance of the, or is it a resolution?
A second.
I move acceptance of the annual financial report. It's been seconded by Commissioner Fish. Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion to accept the report?
Fritz?
Thank you all for your work. Thank you. Sorry. Thank you all for your work. Thank you, City Auditor Lavon Griffin-Vallade, for your leadership on this work. It's reassuring to have an outside audit and to find that we are in good shape and that we are doing our reporting correctly. So I appreciate that advice, and I especially am happy to hear that that is so. So congratulations to our financial services departments also, and all of our bureaus are very careful in our documentation, and we will continue to be so. Aye.
Thank you for your professional work. I want to thank OMF, and particularly I want to thank the folks in my bureaus, Parks and Housing, that have been working diligently to address the questions and the information requests and who've been working really hard to get it right. Your chart illustrates that, for example, in the Housing Bureau, we have a lot of HUD money.
Yeah.
And a lot of that money is very complicated. There's complicated protocols, and I'm especially proud that in this particular audit, you found no material problems. And I am extremely proud of the folks that I work with who have been working hard to get it right. So thanks to everyone, and please to support the resolution. Aye.
Leonard?
Thank you. Aye.
Adams?
Thank you. And I'm glad we bring these to council. So thank you, Auditor. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for 1020 Time Certain? Item number, emergency ordinance, item number 280.
Ratify an initial labor agreement between the city and the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Local 189H, relating to terms and conditions of employment of represented employees in the Portland Housing Bureau Bargaining Unit.
Good morning, Director Deckard.
And I want to start off by, I don't know if Commissioner...
I have a brief statement to tee it up. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Colleagues, today we have an opportunity to celebrate a very significant milestone in the history of the new Portland Housing Bureau. And that is an opportunity to ratify an initial collective bargaining agreement between the city and AFSCME Local 189H. Mayor Adams, when we began this journey and you and I worked to bring the talent and treasure of the Portland Development Commission and to blend it with the talent and treasure of the former Bureau of Housing and Community Development to create a new bureau and a powerhouse bureau called the new Portland Housing Bureau, we knew there would be many challenges. In the past few years, we have worked through some of the great challenges, physically locating and co-locating all the employees, changing systems, hiring not one but two leaders, creating a new advisory body, developing our first strategic plan, working hard to protect our funding sources, building stronger partnerships in the community, meeting the needs that keep rising as dollars are being stretched, and on and on. And I think today is, in some ways, perhaps not the end of that first chapter, but is a significant milestone. Because when we created this new bureau, we said to our employees that the city would honor its commitment to allow them to freely choose, if they so chose, to join a labor organization of their choice. And consistent with that, there was an election, and the people that I'm proud to lead elected to be represented by AFSCME. Then the hard work began, and we sat down and we hammered out our first collective bargaining agreement, our first labor agreement. A lot of people put a lot of time and energy into this, and I just want to acknowledge some of them. First, I want to just salute the union's bargaining team, because in addition to your work representing your co-workers at the table, each of you have incredibly heavy workloads. that you've been managing. And so Ryan Dibert, Kim McCarty, Mary Welch, and Phil Willis Conger, would you raise your hands and please be acknowledged? This is our union bargaining team, and thank you for your service. I'd also like to extend my heartfelt thanks to the city's team, Yvonne Deckard, Gerald Gaddis, Julia Getshaw, and Cheyenne Scott, for their outstanding work, as well as Gail Baird and Larry Nelson. A special shout out to Rob Wheaton with AFSCME for his excellent partnership with the city throughout this process, and we look forward to continuing our good work together, Rob. And finally, I'd like to thank Tracy Manning, our director, Jacob Fox and Alyssa Marr for keeping your eyes on the prize and supporting this process throughout, and great work to you. I'm proud to be part of this process. I'm pleased that my employees have been able to successfully exercise their rights, and I ask my colleagues today to join with me in approving our initial contract. And with that, I'll turn it over to Yvonne.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Yvonne Decker, director from the Bureau of Human Resources. Sitting with me is Julia Getchell, and she was our chief spokesperson for this particular contract negotiations, and will answer any technical questions that you may have as as we move forward. Excuse me. You know, this, in my tenure, you very seldom have an opportunity to create a labor agreement from scratch. And I didn't think I would have that opportunity, but I have, and it felt really good. I think the city and the union worked really hard to construct a labor agreement that was common sense, that was cost effective, that is structured in a way that will allow the Bureau and our employees to move forward in a very productive way, and that I think can serve as a model in restructuring some of our current agreements or when we come to the table to create new agreements. I'm going to cover some of the highlights in this agreement just for council's information. This is an agreement that covers 33 professionals in the Housing Bureau. On the overtime language, which is in Article 8 for our FLSA-covered employees, they will be eligible for weekly overtime. But they'll be eligible for daily overtime. And for weekly overtime, they will be eligible, but only after they have actually worked 40 or more hours in the work week. For our FLSA-exempt employees, they will receive comp time hour for hour. And they will have the ability to flex their schedules within a two-week period in order to mitigate costs for the city. For Article 10, which is the seniority and layoff and recall, employees in this unit will only be eligible to bump within the Housing Bureau. And then employees, like all other city employees, will stay on the layoff list if they're laid off for a minimum of 3 years and a maximum of 5 years. They receive the same holidays that's consistent with all other city employees. If they work an alternative schedule, their holiday pay will be paid for the full day in which they work. So if they work 4-10s, then they will just get the day and not have to supplement that with vacation time, which is what we moved to with DCTU and non-reps. Vacation time will be accumulated the same as all other city employees, with the exception of course, public safety, who has a slightly different accumulation schedule on vacation. What is unique about this group is that when they are taking 3 to 5 consecutive days, they will give the Bureau 15 days advance notice. If they're taking 6 to 10, they will give the Bureau 30 days advance notice. And if they're taking over 11 consecutive days, then they will actually plan ahead and give the Bureau up to a 45-day notice. On their health and life insurance, this group will be a part of the LMBC, and so they will have a member from the union on the LMBC, which will also entail that the city will add one more management member to the LMBC. And then it also means that we will have to do LOAs with all of our other unions in order to modify the numbers that their contract shows as far as the structure of the LMBC. And so we'll move from a structure of 12 to a structure of 14. This group did agree to develop, implement a professional development fund. That fund will be $10,000 a year for each year of the contract. We will be putting together a joint labor management committee in order that we'll administer the fund. The $10,000 basically means that each employee can be reimbursed up to $1,500, and then that will be prorated for part-time employees for professional development. The professional development fund is not grievable, and it actually sunsets at the end of this contract. And then either party can actually terminate the entire Article 22, within 30 days with written notice. On the grievance and arbitration language, Article 32, it is actually the same as the DCTU. With the exception that disciplinary action may be appealed at level 2 within 30 days instead of 14 days. And we did that in order to give the unit time to really thoroughly investigate, what the facts are so that they can make a good decision about the grievance procedure. And so we gave them added time. Mediation and arbitration costs are paid by the party incurring them. This is a four-year agreement, and so the agreement starts July 1 of 2011 and will expire June 30th of 2015. In Schedule A and Article 30, the employees will receive a 1.2% COLA for back to July 1, as all other city employees were given up on once this is ratified. As of July 1st, they will receive a 3.3% COLA as given to all other city employees. And then in the two out years, which will be fiscal year 13-14 and 14-15, they will have a floor of 1% and a ceiling of 5% like all other labor agreements. The party agreed that we would actually transfer these employees from a pay range to an 8-step pay schedule, and that will be effective June 30th of 2012. And then we had a number of employees, because this is a combined unit, and we had a number of employees that came over from PDC, because of how that transfer was actually structured, these employees did not receive any type of a merit or COLA increase over the length of time once they transferred until this labor agreement was put in place. And so we worked to see if there was a compromise that we could come up because they had been receiving very positive performance evaluations. So when we place these 11 individuals on their step, they will actually be placed on, they will receive 2 steps instead of 1. Additionally, management retained the ability to place newly hired employees promoting to a range other than entry, and that will be very helpful for the city as far as being in a competitive market. And then I think the last highlight is that we also negotiated management's right to conduct performance evaluations that are not subject to the grievance process. The total new cost of this labor agreement over the life of the contract is about $182,000. And I recommend that council ratifies this agreement.
Thank you.
Discussion from council? All right. Good work. Anyone signed up to testify?
No one else signed up.
Then would you please call the vote on emergency ordinance 280.
Fritz?
Thank you all for your good work on this. Congratulations to Director Deckard on doing an agreement from scratch. And thank you for all of your work over your career here in the city of Portland. I'm particularly pleased to hear that there'll be another AFSCME member on the Labor Management Benefits Committee working to manage healthcare costs and doing a really great job of it. So I think that's another positive aspect of this contract. Thank you all. Aye.
Fish.
I want to thank everybody that worked so hard to bring this home. And since I mentioned the bargaining team, I just want to put the human face on it for a second because I'm very proud of what they do for our city. Ryan, who I mentioned, is one of the key people on our ending homelessness team. Kim is wears many hats, but currently she is helping drive our Fair Housing Action Plan. Mary is an administrative support specialist, so she's working in lots of different areas, helping different teams. And Phil has a long history around home ownership. And we have seen significant reduction in force over the last 3 years because of the reduction in our funding, which means the work hasn't slowed down, but we have fewer people doing it. And our team at the Bureau is working harder than ever, producing great outcomes, and we're very grateful. I believe passionately in the right of people in the private and public sector to join labor organizations of their choice. Today, I hope, is evidence of that. This was a hard-fought contract. I believe it is a fair contract, and it is where we will continue to build for the future. But I will tell you, after spending 20 years prior to having the honor of doing this job, working in the labor relations field, the test is not whether you can get your first contract. The test is how we administer the contract. And I'm confident, based on the collaborative and respectful and constructive way that we've reached this point, that we will administer this contract in the same spirit and do so flexible on both sides with the goal of resolving problems before they become disputes and of mutual respect in the workplace. Thank you for all of your good work and to our city team for bringing it home. I'm deeply grateful. Aye.
Leonard?
Well, anybody that's negotiated contracts over any period of time knows it's one of the most challenging things you can do professionally. That was certainly my experience. And one thing that one learns on either side, whether you're on the union side or management side, that a victory by one side is a short-lived celebration. So that if you don't understand when you're negotiating a deal that it has to be workable and supported by both sides, just wait till the next round of bargaining, and the other side that lost has their knives sharpened and are waiting to be on top in that agreement. So to be a successful bargainer requires not just getting a deal that makes sense, but one that makes sense for both sides and that politically is supported by both sides. Those are the best deals because then they continue on in perpetuity. And so, Yvonne, you've done just a great job, in my opinion, as our chief negotiator. And I've greatly appreciated your understanding of that balance, which is not an easy quality to find in somebody in a position such as yours. And therefore, if I'm not mistaken, I think you are the longest-serving HR director, at least in my memory, and I think even before that, and that's not an accident. You've done a great job. Thank you. Aye.
Adams.
Well, you have done a fantastic job, and this is yet another example of that. Congratulations to and thank you to Commissioner Fish. I think this is officially the end of the beginning of the Bureau, right?
It is your favorite expression.
Yeah.
So I'll let you have the last word on it.
So good work in starting up a brand new public endeavor, a business. You've done great work, and thanks to the entire team in the Bureau as well for your work in hammering this out. And again, thanks to BHR and the entire team, including Director Deckard. Aye.
Thank you.
All right. We have one more.
Two more.
Can you read the next title?
The four-fifths item 299.
Okay.
Accept bid of Emmerich Construction Company for the Emergency Coordination Center project for $10,350,000.
Good morning, Director Moody.
Good morning, Mayor, City Council. Christine Moody from Procurement Services. You have before you the procurement report recommending a contract award to Emmerich Construction in the amount of $10,350,000. This project was solicited as a low bid, therefore the city's good faith efforts program requirements were applicable. Six bids were received, and the low bidder, Triplett Wellman, was deemed non-responsive to the good faith efforts requirements and was rejected. Triplett Wellman's bid was $10,280,000. We identified 32 divisions of work for potential minority women and emerging small business contracting opportunities. Subcontracting participation from IMRIC at bid time was at 3.56%. IMRIC Construction is a strong supporter of the city's programs and has worked with us on identifying additional opportunities for MWESBs since they were found responsive to our GFE requirements. The MWSB subcontractor participation is now at 15.83%. Some of the additional opportunities are a $678,000 subcontract to a minority business for excavation and utility work, and $192,734 subcontract to a minority business for furnishing and installation of doors and hardware. In addition, $44,229 is going to MWSB suppliers on the project. I'll turn this over to council if there are any questions regarding the business, the bidding process. And Jim Coker is here from facilities to answer technical questions about the project you have, and a representative from IMIC Construction is also in the audience.
In what way was the low bid of Triplett Wellman non-responsive? It seems if the initial bid of this one was just a little over 3%. How was Triplett Wellman even worse?
The good faith effort requirements are not based upon the percentage that they come in with, and actually Triplett Wellman was very similar to that. It was 2.69 or something like that. So that is not based, we don't base our responsiveness on the percentage of subcontracting, but on the requirements on how you obtain those subcontractors. So they weren't responsive to our original requirements of soliciting for subcontracting.
And do, in an instant like that, do we follow up and give training on how we expect it to be done?
Yes, we offer that to contractors that want that type of assistance. And actually during this bidding process, because there were so many divisions of work, we offered that up several times through the bidding process for assistance, not doing the solicitation, but what the requirements are and if anybody had any questions.
Thank you.
All right, anyone wish to testify on this matter?
No one else signed up.
Please call the vote.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Thank you. We have one more, the one that was pulled.
286.
I'm looking. Oh, right. That's one that was pulled.
Yeah.
Is that the only one left?
That's
yep.
The last one.
Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 286?
Extend contract with G4S Secure Solutions USA, Inc. by $1,616,819 to provide for uniform security officers' services.
Mr. Keita, what are we looking at?
Good morning. I'm Robert Keita, Facility Services Manager, OMF. What you have before you, we were here last year to extend the G4S contract for an additional 5-year period, and any actual extensions beyond the first year would come to council each year for any additional extensions. During the year, as everybody's aware, there's been a lot of unrest within around City Hall as far as the protest and the Occupy movement, and we continue to have concerns that the continuity of our security program is of critical importance right now. I do not see that going beyond this extension will be necessary after this additional year extension. The contractor has continued to provide good service, exceeds our fair wage, provides benefits for its employees, and has continued to do community outreach with regards to its recruiting of its employees. So we're recommending one additional year extension on this contract, or renewal of this contract.
And the $1.6 million, was that an unexpected increase in the amount of the contract?
It's the same amount as last year, so it's a one-year amount. We actually would expect that amount to reduce during the year as I think Parks Bureau is actually in the process of awarding a security contract of her own, so some of their services may fall off of this, as well as work that's going on out of BES water treatment plant is getting completed, which will reduce the amount of security we're providing out there too.
So you said that we might, this would might be the last extension.
Yes.
But the contract that we passed last year allows for several more extensions.
It has up to five available, but based on where we are and the economy and things starting to improve, we feel that, you know, things are getting better where we'll be able to actually go out and solicit a new contract for the next renewal period.
And just as we just heard about procurement services breaking down into smaller subcontracts, is there a reason that we have to have the same security firm doing all of these different components that are listed in the ordinance?
It's again, important to the continuity of providing security services. We have armed and unarmed, and those officers need to be able to work together and count on each other. Also, the connection with Portland Police Bureau that we have maintained over the years to provide additional assistance as necessary in dealing with the more difficult situations. So there are items in the future or, say, the next process that can go through, but the way the contract is set up is it allows for the addition or increase based on an unforeseen circumstance, such as, you know, a break-in at the fleet parking lot or something where cars are being vandalized, to be able to readily have the employees available to escalate and go. So it fixes the price so that they can't, you know, we don't have to pay a premium for those services, but it's the actual contracted amount, regardless of how we go forward with it.
When we, so we'll do a new bidding process next year to break it into those other components that you mentioned?
Absolutely, my plan, yes.
And in point of fact, let's say, because you mentioned parks, we're concluding a process where we're shifting to some full-time rangers during the day, and we've done a separate RFP process for evening security, and that is a smaller contract and has been competitively bid.
And is it true that the RFP process asks for having had experience with the city as one of the factors being considered?
I don't have a copy of it in front of me, but as far as our process, I do not believe that ask for that as a requirement to a response, no.
And are the personnel hired required to be ex-military and police officers?
With regards to the armed security, we stipulate that previous law enforcement, ex-military experience, things like that, are beneficial to any officers that are considered for armed. But that's not the hiring of the company. That's the actual process that we look at who will perform armed services within our contract.
And they have to be a BPST.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
They have to be state certified.
But you can go to get state certified without having been in the military or in uniformed law enforcement, correct?
That's correct. We ask for a higher level of security, especially in the arm, so that we can deal with situations in a more positive manner, you know, through verbal, you know, exchange and communications, and rather than any kind of use of force.
But is that a requirement that they have to be?
It is not a requirement. It's an added bonus.
Thank you.
All right. Anyone signed up to testify?
We didn't have a sign-up sheet for this.
Is there anyone wish to testify? Please come forward.
Thank you, Mayor Adams and commissioners, for listening to me today. I have attempted on several occasions now to try. I'm sorry. My name is Brenda Hyatt. And I am the executive manager of DB Security Services. And I have been in contact with CSER in your office. And I've met with Commissioner Fritz. I've met with Jim Blackwood in your office, Commissioner Fish. And I have also had extensive meetings with the Bureau of Procurement. My concern with these contracts is, unlike the construction contract that you guys just approved, security is not a contract where you can go out and hire other MWESB firms in order to bring into compliance. I have been working with the different agencies to try and make the RFPs so that smaller companies would stand a chance of competing. And I was actually really excited when the RFP for the parks deal came out of your office because it actually did not require us to have a small army or a small military or a small police force in order to compete. But my biggest issue is that in the city of Portland, for whatever reason and wherever it's coming from, the MWESB firms are not able to compete in the area of security. I suspect it's the same way in the area of janitorial, but I'm not 100% sure. I put in a protest to the Parks Bureau Award because, once again, the three top companies in the city of Portland who have, I believe, 100% of the security contracts in the city of Portland were the ones that were shortlisted, again, for the Parks Bureau contract, and that was Portland Patrol, Pacific Patrol, and G4S. And the problem is, and this is what I pointed out to Commissioner Fritz, is when you respond to an RFP, it's basically a 20-page resume where you are huffing and puffing and making yourself look good. I don't know of any of us who have ever put in a resume who put on there the jobs that we had been fired at or the jobs that we did not do well. And so with this, what is happening is that we can't, as small companies, compete with these big companies. I have responses in front of me where Pacific Patrol touts the fact that they give $20,000 in charitable services to security in within the city. I have a deal where the one of the companies.
I need you to wrap up, ma'am.
Okay, one of the companies is so secure in their position with Portland. They say we're not the cheapest, but hire us because we come in and clean up the messes of the smaller companies. So, I take offense to that, because my company is very efficient. What I'm asking is that these contracts that Mr. James, the person you are now paying good city funds to look into this MWESB project, I am asking that he be given a chance to do his job, that these contracts, you know, award him for 1 year.
I really need you to wrap up.
Okay. Award them for 1 year. Please don't approve these contracts for 3 years until Mr. James has a chance to do his job and talk with some of the smaller
companies.
All
right. Thank you. And just a reminder to counsel, this is, she mentioned the protest, and so we shouldn't respond to a specific case because of the protest that was filed.
It's been answered.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Call the vote, please.
Thank you, and thank you, Ms. Hyatt, for presenting the information both in council and in briefings with our office. I appreciate Mr. Keeter's response, and particularly that there is a commitment that this is just a one-year extension and that we will be looking at how we do contracts and continuing to look into all of the issues, whether they're relevant or not. I do have a concern that if the amount of charitable giving is part of the evaluation, then that doesn't seem relevant to, I question the relevance to the awarding of contracts. So that's something I'd like you to look into for in the coming process. Appreciate Commissioner Fish having been part of this conversation, leading this conversation, and it's one we need to keep having. With that, though, I do appreciate the good work that's been done on this contract and the commitment that it will just be for 1 year. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard?
I think it's important to observe that probably more here than in most places here, meaning physically in this building, we can't have people who have guns that don't have prior background and training and very sometimes sophisticated means by which you de-escalate a situation. We cannot tolerate, as elected officials, having people run out of City Hall for just simply raising their voices, because this is the people's house. My experience with the group that's here today and the ones that have filled the positions in the current contract has been, to a person, exemplary. They have helped me and my office, and I know each of the other offices, diffuse potentially violent situations into conversations. Not everybody has the capacity to do that. Not even necessarily do I think could we call the Portland Police Bureau and have uniform officers show up and do that, because the mere presence of an officer in a uniform inflames some people. So I'm not as familiar with the nuances of the contract as maybe some of my colleagues are. I do know whatever standard you've set has been a high standard. It's been an excellent standard, only exemplified just coincidentally today by the arrival of Lieutenant Harry Jackson, who is one of the most renowned, respected, retired police officers of the Portland Police Bureau, who now is part of our security team. I couldn't be more proud of that. So I think, you know, it's important to balance a number of factors, but definitely the atmosphere of City Hall has to be one where the highest caliber of men and women that are here, particularly those that are armed, has to be maintained at its current level. And anything less than that would be irresponsible in my view. Thank you. Hi.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank the – I, too, want to take this opportunity to thank the existing security team. I rely on them a lot, and they do a fantastic job, and I'm very grateful. And I, too, think that I won't be here, but I think we should continue the requirement of retired police officers when it comes to this building. I would not change that at all. It's not to say I don't like competition among contractors, and I don't think, you know, that we can I think that we can improve and look at multiple contracting, but there are certain things that, as one of the most recognizable Portlanders around, I really need folks that know what they're doing. And being retired police officers is a really, really, really good thing. So we are in recess. Actually, wait, I didn't bang the gavel. Sorry. I'd like to move motion City Council evening meeting on April 18th to hold the hearing for the Portland Plan. We've worked with staff. It was supposed to be at 6 p.m. Public testimony at 6:30 p.m.
Mayor, what day is that? What day is that? Do you know?
Can you just hang? Give me 2 seconds.
No.
April 16th.
Yeah. What day of the month is that?
The 18th. 18th.
Yeah.
18th. April 18th is Wednesday.
Sorry.
Wednesday.
April 18th. So that's the motion. Is there a second?
Hang on. Did you check this with my schedule?
We checked it with everybody.
Weren't we going to be out of town that day, Nick? Weren't we?
You and I have another engagement.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, so but you the do. three of them can handle it.
You are
I
not.
Have great confidence.
Thank you. Yeah.
Great confidence.
Yeah. I haven't asked for an evening meeting in a long time. So moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Please call the vote.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
I'm going to have the mayor speak to my son, because that's an evening that normally we set aside for a meal and then some quality family.
He can come.
What's more important, the Portland Plan or your son?
I want to be a team player.
The 25-year plan for the city.
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. All right, now we're adjourned.
Okay.
Get on with my life.
This is your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for all your great work. Keep it up.